Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another episode of Comedy with Cameron, a job that's no laughing matter. I'm your host, Cameron Kern, a Pierce College student on a journey to explore the vastly exciting world of comedy and performing arts from professionals in the industry. On today's episode, I am joined by Larry Frickin' Omaha,
actor, introduced that way.
Producer, stand-up comedian, and Nightwolf in Mortal Kombat. That's right.
Of Nightwolf.
Welcome, Larry. How you doing today?
Hey, it's good to be here, Cameron. Very good to be here. I love communicating with young folks, man.
That's right. So, like I said, you have an extensive career in like multiple fields of acting and producing. How would you describe your job description right now? If someone
it is a dream job, folks. It's a dream job. 90% of my work is stand-up comedy. I love being a stand-up comic. I love the traveling aspect of it. I love the performing aspect. I love the creating of comedy. Mm-hmm. I write every day. I love the process. And I'm living my dream. You know, I've done a little acting. People have probably seen me on a few TV shows and a couple of movies. But really, my love is stand-up comedy. So it's good times, man. It's good times.
Sounds amazing. I mean, how long have you been a stand-up comedian?
37 years. I quit my day job in 1980, before you were even a twinkle in your daddy's eye.
That's right. I wasn't even swimming yet.
I was supposed to be a lawyer, and I was sitting in law school one day, looked down at my notes, and realized everything I'd written down were jokes about the professor. Mm-hmm. So I said, you know, who am I kidding? I don't want to be a lawyer.
Right.
I quit and jumped into the comedy world.
What made you want to be involved in comedy? Were you like running from something or?
No, you know what it is? When I was in undergrad school, I took a lot of speech courses. And mm-hmm. So you got to get up and give a speech. So my speeches were always funny. And the teacher even said after one of them, she goes, Larry, you know, your speeches are less a speech and more stand-up comedy. So I was the seed was planted in my brain, stand-up comedy. And then we'd have comedians come to the campus, and I'd go watch them. I go, wow, I want to do that. Mm-hmm. But it took me years before I got to the point where I actually start doing it. I was writing in my journals for years before I ever got up on stage and tried it.
Was that because of fear? Like, were you scared?
It was because there were no venues back then.
Really?
There were no open mics, no audition nights, no comedy clubs back when I was in undergrad school. In 1980, when I finally quit my day job to jump into the comedy world, there was only the Comedy Store and the Improv in Hollywood. And then in New York, there was the Improv and Comic Strip. And in between, there was nothing. And I grew up in the Midwest. There was nothing.
Yeah.
So I would volunteer to be MC at banquets. Okay. I would volunteer anywhere there was a microphone. I would volunteer to be in charge of the microphone. That way I would do jokes in between introducing people. And that got me going.
Right. Okay. So what did it take for, did someone like say like, did what was the process from doing that to being a comedian? Like, were they like, look, I have this event happening tomorrow. We want you to come perform. Was there anything that launched you to the comedy stage?
I took it in my own hands. After being MC at so many events, I knew I had the ability to make people laugh. So I went to a club in my city and I said, look, I got a lot of friends and family who could fill this club if you let me do my stand-up comedy one night. And he thought it was a great idea.
Yeah.
Because comedy was just in the infancy as we know it now. And so I took it into my own hands. And two nights I was at that club and I packed it and did an hour of comedy, and I'm trying to remember if I was funny. I know I got some laughs, but to be brand new, to do an hour.
Yeah, and have it be packed.
Yeah, but it was mostly friends and family, you know.
Oh, okay.
And so that was how I started, and then I knew I had what it took to be a mm-hmm. comedian. It was just a matter of improving every day. And another thing I did was I called up a talk radio show where the guy was very funny himself. And
Just like me.
And I introduced myself and I go, hey, can I call you every day and do like 5 minutes of comedy? He goes, yeah, that's a great idea. So every day I'd call him and I'd do a stupid book review or review a concert or just tell him a stupid story. And he loved it and he would laugh at all my stupid stuff. So that's how I got going. That's how I got going and right. knew that I had something some comedic flair.
Nice. So back to like that hour of, like you said, on stage and you're brand new with your family. How would you describe your act at that time? Like you said, you're doing book reviews.
Yeah. Well, when I did the hour in the club, my first time doing, I did a lot of making fun of TV shows, a lot of making fun of commercials, making fun of politics. I was a political science major under grad school, so I was aware of politics, and there were a lot of crazy politicians back then, just like there are today.
Yeah, you must be going wild nowadays with your...
Oh, God. So that's what I talked about, was those things, politics, commercials, TV, and my crazy life. I don't know if you've heard any of my stand-up, but I talk a lot about my childhood, being the youngest in the family. I got all the hand-me-downs. I had four older sisters. And that brings a whole lot of comedy with it.
Yeah?
Yeah, so that's what I talked about. And to this, actually today, I still talk a lot about the same things. You know, life.
Right.
My crazy life, other people, my friend's crazy life. The crazy women I meet.
Okay, nice.
Lots of freaks in Southern California.
So when you started performing, I mean, obviously you've been performing for many, many years. When you started, did you receive the cliche boos and the crickets? Like, did you bomb a few times for you to really get your feet running in the comedy world? Or is it from the gate you were just killing it?
I was never killing it. I did okay. I remember a friend of mine had a band, and I asked him if I could go up during the break. And he said, sure. And he gave me a real nice introduction. And I did about 12 minutes. And I remember doing, like, every other joke got a good laugh. So that was a pretty good percentage for being new. But as the years went on, you have those bad nights. I remember one night where the audience just wasn't with me, and sweat was just pouring off of me. And when I left that night, I go, man, I don't know what I did wrong, but I don't ever want to experience that again.
Right.
It happened probably in 37 years. I probably had five nights where I didn't do well.
Mm-hmm.
But those were the early years, you know. And a lot of times it's the venue, biker bars. You know, they'd rather watch TV and drink than pay attention to a comedian.
What do, like, the bikers do? Like, can you describe kind of what happened that night? Like, would they, like, throw beer at you and, like...
I've seen beer bottles thrown, but never at me. I tend to work fast. I got a lot of short jokes, and I work mm-hmm. fast. So usually at least every other joke they'll like, so they won't be throwing bottles at me. But biker bars, it's just that... they're not used to having a comedian in their little home. You know, that's their home. And so they got to get used to it. And it's like an alien coming in from outer space. You know, they go, what's this guy doing over there talking? And it takes a while for them to get into your world. And mm-hmm. it's a hell of a challenge. It's good to do it because it puts calluses on you as a comedian. You got to have calluses. So, but you don't want to do those too much.
You've obviously coped with it well because you're still continuing it today. What are some ways to cope with it? Like, how do you?
I'll tell you one of the things I did, because you know they'll heckle you in those biker bars. And so after doing one of those places, I went home. I go, I have to have some good comebacks for these jerks. So I, like two or three days, I wrote the funniest, harshest comebacks I could think of. You know. Mm-hmm. And that helped me a lot. The next time I was in that situation, I knew exactly, I would pull from one of these 10 comebacks I had and put the heckler down and get a laugh and then continue on my way. And as I got better as a comedian, I didn't need to rely on those comebacks anymore.
Yeah, like, I mean, like you said, then you were receiving heckling often. You never relied on the heckling much in your stand-up career?
I don't like to, no. I wanted to be a good comic.
Like, some comedians, like, go in there and they're like, I'm just going to talk to the audience for, like, 20 minutes and then leave. Yeah. Yeah. You were never a comedian like that?
I don't appreciate that type of attitude. I think that's a lot of BS when comics do that. I think they're just lazy writers. They don't want to take the time to write good jokes and be prepared with good material.
Right.
And that's the way I see that. Because the comics I respect have great jokes, great material, and they don't just talk to the audience. Unless there's one or two guys I know who talk to the audience, but that's their act. They know what they're going to say. No matter what the audience member says, he knows what he's going to say, and he's going to get a big laugh.
Right. So what are some ways that you change your comedy to ensure smoother sets where the laughs come in consistently and you're not being heckled so often?
Editing. Editing. Because when you're new, you tend to write too much. You over-explain.
Right, yeah.
And I used to over-explain. And eventually I learned, watching good comics, I go, oh, yeah, he cut me that real short, got right to the point. You got to make the premise clear and short, the setup very short, and the punch short, and bam. And then if you can tag it, that's great.
So who is someone that you – is there anybody that you go to when you're practicing these sets, or do you just jump right on stage? Like when you've edited down all this material, is there like a friend that you go to and like
not really.
Can you listen to this for?
No, not really. Every once in a while, me and buddies will bounce a joke off each other, but that's rare. It's rare. I'm confident at this point. For many years now, I've been confident in what I write. I mm-hmm. go, this is ready to try on stage. And I'll go up, try it, and it either laughs. I either get a big laugh, a little laugh, or no laugh. And then I have to edit, change a word here and there to try and get the big laugh. But I just talk to myself. I do a lot of talking to myself at home. And I run these things to my mind, and I speak them so I can feel if the rhythm is there that I want. Make sure I got the right words that roll off my tongue real easy. So it's pretty much an introverted thing. I don't rely on anybody else. I don't try them out. I don't test my jokes out on anybody.
Do you help out other comedians, like by editing their jokes?
I have helped others. I've had years ago. I used to help a lot of the young upcoming comics, and a couple of them have gone on to be really good comics. I don't have the patience for it that much anymore because it's a very brain taxing thing. You know, if somebody asks for my advice, mm-hmm. I'll give it, no problem. But if somebody wants me to sit down with them for 2 or 3 hours and construct an act, I don't have that kind of patience anymore. It's a lot of work.
So we're going to switch gears a little bit here. If you're just joining us, you're listening to a great interview with my homeboy, Larry Frickin' Omaha. That's right. The voice of Nightwolf. We'll get into that a little bit later. So unfortunately, we found out recently that there's this, you know, dark side to comedy. Like there's a stigma that comedians feel pressure to be always on. And for meeting you today, I feel like you're kind of a cool, collected, suave type of man, and you're not trying to like hit me with jokes every 5 seconds like some other comedians. Do you feel that pressure to always be on, and have you come to find this out yourself? And how would you deal with it or help someone deal with it, like an upcoming comedian?
Yeah, I don't feel that pressure to always be on. It annoys me. It's a very annoying thing when a comic is always on. And that's pretty much the way I've seen it for many, 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 many years. And then if someone's always on, we make fun of them. You know, turn it off, shut it off, save it for the stage.
Right.
But when someone's really insecure, they try to be funny all the time. And even though I am insecure, I know that I have a good act. I know I'm a good comic, and I don't need to prove anything to anybody. People will always come up to me, and when they find out I'm a comic, go, oh, tell me a joke. I go, pay me some money. I'm a professional.
Right.
So, if anybody ever asked me about that, I would tell them, save the jokes for the stage.
Okay.
It's that simple.
So, do you have any comedians that you admire right now or admired back at then?
Oh,
some
yeah.
of my favorite comedians, oh, yeah. they kind of have that type of style, like they're always on, you know, like Eddie Murphy or just to name a few, but do you have anybody like
I think
that?
The one that was always known for being always on was Robin Williams.
Yes, Robin Williams is a good example of that.
And his close friends understand, and I always looked at him, I go, why is he always on? Why can't he rest it? And it turns out he was so insecure, so massively
right, yeah.
insecure, and he had all these serious problems in his brain, you know, and look at what happened. You know, he ended up killing himself. But I tell you who I respect in comedy is Chris Rock. I respect Seinfeld. He writes. He's a real professional. He's not one of my favorite comics, but I respect that he respects the craft.
Yeah. He really respects the craft.
Yeah, he's really a professional.
Mm-hmm.
Chris Rock, who's another guy I liked? Well, George Carlin and Richard Pryor from the old school, you know, they're
classic.
Oh, man, they just have so much great material. If young comics today don't listen to Richard Pryor or George Carlin, they're really missing
it. They're doing
it
wrong.
Man. Yeah.
So comedy often comes from adversity. Like Chris Rock, like you said, is one of your favorites, and how he got bullied on the schoolyard. Is this the case with you? Did you face any adversity growing up that gave you or drove you into comedy and gave you a lot of material? Like you said, you had a big family.
Yeah. My adversity came from my environment. I was very, I had a very low self-esteem as a kid, and everybody can relate to that.
Yeah.
And I had a very low self-concept. I really hated myself. I hated the color of my skin. You know, I wanted to be white. I was totally brainwashed. And so there was a lot of self-hatred, and that really held me back for the first 20 years of my life. And then when I had the big change, I met people who changed my whole way of thinking, and I became started to learn how to love myself. Then I looked back at all those ugly memories and made comedy out of it.
Right.
And it's a big part of my act now. Although I go more and more now to, I'm talking more and more about current stuff, people in my life, crazy women, crazy friends, crazy family members, and crazy life, just everyday life.
Okay. So you said you're into politics, right?
I used to be more. But I still pay attention to it.
Yeah. Nowadays we have this president, like we all know. I mean, I'm not going to get into that. That's for a different show. What is your stance on that?
Well, I was trying to stay away from him because I tried not to mention him too much, because when you bring it up in your act, you're going to lose half your audience.
Right. That's kind of where I was going.
And the whole goal is to increase your audience base so you can spread your comedy jokes and make good money. But like on social media, I'm starting to make comments about Trump. I just can't hold it in anymore. In my act, I joke about Trump, but I also joke about Hillary. I joke about Sanders. I joke about anybody who's in the political world, so everybody can laugh at it. I don't want to just alienate half my audience.
Right.
That's how I deal with it.
So would you say, I mean, I don't want to get into too political, but you said you went to the University of Nebraska, correct? I mean, that part of the country is mainly like Republican, and would you say you share some of those beliefs, or since you're living in California, the mainly Democratic state?
No, I've leaned liberal all my life. I was always hanging out with the troublemakers back in Nebraska. My politics were always left. Yeah. I'm a conservative guy when it comes to my money. But when it comes to other things, I'm liberal and open-minded about it.
Right. So when you make a joke in politics, like we saw with Kathy Griffin, I think that was, how she made that joke about beheading Donald Trump. Right. Is there such a thing as taking it too far?
Well, with her, that wasn't even funny. I don't know what she was trying to prove with that.
Yeah, I thought. I mean,
it made
personally,
no sense.
I thought it was a little too far. I think comedians have the right. I mean, freedom of speech. Obviously, they have the right to say whatever they want. I think it's their job to tiptoe on those lines. But I think she might have took it too far there.
It was a very poorly conceived idea. I don't know what she was trying to prove with that. Made no sense. But you know, that's her style. But you know, she should have. Double down, you know. If you're going to go that way, go all the way.
Yeah.
Don't back off and apologize. I will never apologize for my comedy. That's one rule that good comedians have, is never apologize. You said it, you go with it.
Do you think there's parts in your comedy that you are tiptoeing on the line and you're aware of it?
Yeah.
Or do you think in some audiences you say something and to you, you don't have that, you know, conscious?
Sometimes I purposely tiptoe. Because I don't like to get real graphic sexual in my act, but there's a lot of funny sexual stuff that I can tiptoe towards.
Yeah.
I get huge laughs. I don't have to get gross. I don't have to get graphic. It's challenging to me to be creative enough to get good laughs with sex jokes without getting gross. You know.
Right. Yeah. It's respectful to do it that way.
And this way I get hired by a lot of corporations to perform at their events because I can work clean. You know, I'd rather work clean. It's fun getting nasty now and then, but you know. Because I know a lot of nasty women.
Save that for another time. So we're going to switch gears once again. You have a I mean, I had to talk about it because I'm such a huge fan of the Mortal Kombat. Mortal Kombat. You have a career in voice acting. Is that correct? Would you say that?
I've done some work in voice acting, and one of the most popular is Nightwolf of Mortal Kombat. It's so strange because my nephew used to beat me in the game. He was only 5, and he would destroy me in the Mortal Kombat game. And then a few years later, I was hired to be the voice of Nightwolf in Mortal Kombat, and it just blew my nephew's mind. You know, I go, I can't believe it, man. You can't even play the game, and you're Nightwolf, man.
Have you ever gone to like one of those Comic-Con or
no, I haven't.
Con conventions? So you've never been like tackled by a fan?
No.
You are Nightwolf.
Maybe I should go.
Yeah, you should. If I was Nightwolf, I'd go all the time
with the outfit.
Yes, and the face paint.
Yeah.
Oh, that'd be so sweet.
Andy, maybe I'm missing out on something.
You are missing out, man. I thought you were gonna come in here and be like, "Yeah, I get tackled all the time." if I were you, I'd start.
It was interesting. I was surprised. One of the first colleges I ever did after the Nightwolf thing came out, the crowd, the kids in the audience just went crazy when I was introduced as the voice of Nightwolf, and it surprised me.
Yeah,
I wasn't ready for that.
So, you say you're a comedian. You also have a career in acting and voice acting and producing. Obviously, you put comedy first, but what are some ways that stand-up comedy has helped you in those careers as well?
Acting has made me a better comedian. Taking acting classes and doing acting has made me a better comic because there were certain simple things that I wasn't aware of. Like I was breathing improperly.
Mm-hmm.
And my acting coach taught me how to breathe properly. Made a huge difference in my performance on stage. Being more alive, being in the moment. I was always too self-conscious when I was on stage as a comedian, and acting helped me to break out of that.
Mm-hmm.
And just be in the moment and have a great time. So acting has helped me be a better comic. I produced one show. I was executive producer on one show called Going Native. It was on Showtime. And that's a lot of work. Producing is a lot of work. You make more money, but it's a lot of work.
Yeah. So to switch gears once again, I'm sorry I'm switching gears so much. I'm new to this, but I'm just trying.
It's all good.
So,
you're doing great.
Do you have any advice to someone like myself in college who doesn't really know what they want to do and isn't interested in pursuing comedy? A lot of the comedians that come in here have kind of a obtuse start, like that's just kind of jumped into it. How do you think is the best way to go about creating a career in comedy?
Well, there's no one way. There isn't. In this day and age, there is no one way. The way that worked for me was to write jokes out, and then eventually get on a stage somewhere and try them. That's the only way you know if you're funny.
Right.
There's no other substitute for that. Nowadays, we have a lot of comedians that are coming out of social media. They have hundreds of thousands of followers, and they get them to come to a club, and then they get on stage, and they do their jokes that aren't funny.
Right.
But they have a lot of followers, mm-hmm. So the club owner's happy because they filled the place and they bought drinks. I'm old school, man. You gotta do 5 minutes first, 10 minutes, 15 minutes, and make it good. You know, don't try to become a headliner too fast. So many of the young comics, they want to be stars overnight. They want to be a headliner overnight. You try to skip the steps, and you're in for trouble.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Larry, for joining us. That's all the time we have. I hope you enjoyed another
episode.
My
pleasure.
Yeah, it was absolutely wonderful. Hope you enjoyed another episode of Comedy with Cameron, a job that's no laughing matter. I'd like to thank Airy Frickin' Omaha, a.k.a. Night Wolf, for joining me today. For such a great interview, the least I can do is give you some plug time. So you have about a minute or two. Please feel free to let the people know what you got going on in your life, any upcoming dates to shows that the plethora of Pierce College students can check out.
I wish I was doing something local. I travel so much. Like Friday, I'll fly to Miami to do a show. And then October 7th, I'll be doing a corporate event in Huntington Beach. Very few local stuff these days. I can go to my website, LarryOmaha.net.
Write it down, LarryOmaha.net. Go check out Larry Omaha. He is a crack-up.
Check out my videos.
See you guys next time. I'm Cameron Kern with KPCRadio.com.